thing that bothered me was that you only get perhaps half as much recording time because you now have two bands instead of one. It then occurred to me that I wonder whether it would be possible to have vertical and lateral recording, have the high frequencies recorded with one form and the low frequencies with the other, and then put them back together. So I asked Rafus, who was then working for me, to try to build a recorder which would do this, which would simultaneously follow vertical and lateral recording signals. And he did this, and it was really quite successful, thanks to his mechanical ingenuity. But we then proceeded to record the split recording, high frequencies and low frequencies, with different modes of recording, and put them together, and we got an astonishingly improvement in the quality of the sound. Now, you see, we were doing a measurement job to measure distortion. Now, at this point, it occurred to me that, look, if we could have a wide band on each of these two modes of recording, we really would have, could have stereophonic disc with a single stylus. In other words, you're recording two channels with a single stylus. And so we did this, and sure enough, the results were really quite striking from the point of stereo effects. The patent was applied for, and I realized, because of the measurement, that there was a slight difference in quality between the vertical and the lateral recording. So it was obvious that if you wanted to have identical quality from both channels, you ought to, instead of recording vertically and laterally for the two modes, to have them both at 45 degrees to the surface of the record, but normal to each other, and that's, the patent also covers that, and that very much later became the present system of stereo recording. This actually got me the Emil Berliner Award from the Audio Society in 1962. Now, this was all done, and the patent, I think, was in 1938 or 39 or something like that. Now, that was a pretty bad time to invent anything that required twice as much equipment. Remember, that was the bottom of the Depression. People had trouble buying one loudspeaker and one amplifier, let alone two loudspeakers that you would need for stereo. So the thing interested a number of companies. I remember Bendix and RCA and others came up to hear this, but it was during the Depression, and nothing really happened that I knew of, except later on in England, I had heard that looking forward to the day when something like this would be available, they were recording things stereophonically on magnetic tape. Very much later, I think it was in the 1940s, a very good friend of mine, John Frain, who was with Westrex out in California, called me up one day and said that they had been working on a very confidential project to record stereophonic sound on a disc record. And they had done it successfully only to find out that when they applied for a patent, that the Bell Laboratories, in my name, had already had such a patent. So here was a situation where the stereo disc record was not only invented, but it was reinvented. And it was, by that time, the 17 years had run out, I think, so that it was free for anybody to use, and that is the system which is now used. That has to do with, if you're interested, I might talk about a couple of other patent problems that have to do with this sound recording business. I think the first patent that was ever applied for in my name was a loudspeaker patent, a cone-type loudspeaker with a very, very softly mounted edge of the cone. It was applied for, and I guess it must have taken 10 years before it was issued. I had lost interest in it because I was doing other things. But I had a call one day from the patent attorney, and he said to me, what would you say if I told you you invented that any loudspeaker mounted in a cabinet was covered by your patent? Well, I didn't know exactly what to say, because that wasn't what I was trying to do. I was trying to have an improved loudspeaker. Well, it turned out that the way patent things work, this patent kept going in the patent office, and it was amended and amended, and finally they had this broad claim in there which covered every loudspeaker in a box. However, I don't think that it would have been valid if it were tested in court.